called again? The Provisional Nerf News Network? Okay.
Already forgetting our name.
No, we're doing great. Hello and welcome to the Provisional Nerf News Network podcast. I'm KT of Family Foam Sport. I'm here with my co-hosts. Incredible start. I'm here with my co-hosts, JoltKing627 and VileMods. The fourth member of our team is Grims of Grims Nerfworks, who does the video editing but does not participate in the podcasting side of the show. This show is intended as a partner to the Provisional Nerf News Network show itself, and it's more of an opportunity for us to give our opinions on the news and just babble about things that we think are interesting that's going on in the Nerf scene in a less structured, less sort of directly newsworthy way. We will be doing an episode of the podcast every 2 weeks when we do an episode of the main show, and it will come out shortly after the show, a day or two or so afterwards. And with that, I want to get y'all getting to know each of the members of the team. So, Vile and Jolt, how's it going? How goes this day, this exciting day where we actually released our first episode?
Been great.
Sweet.
Honestly, I'm super happy.
Yeah, it's been a good day. We'll talk about that in a little bit, I think. Vile, would you go ahead and just tell the folks a little bit about yourself, both in general and in terms of Nerf?
I am Vile Mods. I do obviously modding, but we actually just finished up. I do primarily streaming over on Twitch. I do have a YouTube channel, Instagram page, obviously very similar to KT here as well. Yeah, I do kind of everything. I do a little bit of 3D modeling, 3D printing, you know, installation of kits, customization of kits, integration work. I kind of dabble a little bit in everything that's within the hobby. So I would say that in a nutshell, that's what I do.
Well, I think one of the key things about you is your background and some of the other work that you've done and how you've been able to kind of apply those skills to the hobby in a way that not a ton of people are able to.
Yeah, I have a background as a designer. I do CAD specifically. I went to school for that. I've done metalwork, fabrication, circuit board design at one point. Actually, me and you have had history before in modding Game Boys,
that is
of
true.
All things.
That is true.
Like over almost a decade ago, which was incredible to see you again in another hobby that I just randomly picked up. So, but yeah, in quite a lot of, I just mod things in general. Just it didn't matter what it was. If I could get my hands on it and tinker with it, that's what I do. So,
yeah. Yeah. I love watching you work on stream. It's so great. And just the like really finished looking products and the stuff that you make that wind up just, it just looks stock. It just looks like Hasbro made it.
I try. But I try. That is a hard one. I will say that is a hard one. I would say the Rapid Strike was probably my favorite of that. Because it had an integrated Centurion barrel, but yeah, that is all. And the Fate, which
I can't believe
I'm sorry,
you got the paint match.
I know. The Fate is the other one, by the way. I have to get the video out for that. I'm sorry, KT.
You do. Eventually. I need to make that.
I know.
Vile has made a rival Fate, except he took the 4-shot Mega AR that comes out of those HAMP attachments that came in the Modulus series, and it just looks like it. That's what the blaster was originally, and it shoots 4 mega shots one after another because the AR
like
is hooked directly up to the. Yeah, it hits hard, right?
Yeah, the first barrel I was able to get it hitting around 120 FPS actually, which is incredible
for mega. And that is wild.
Yeah, that's with a K25 spring upgrade on it, and it looks like it was made for it. I absolutely love it, but I really need to make that install guide for people for YouTube. I need to get on that.
Yeah. Well, yes, you do. I agree. I'm excited for it. Moving on over to JoltKing627. Tell us a bit about yourself, or not us. We know about you. Tell them.
Obviously, my name is Jolt King. I do a lot of janky mods. I love messing around with internals, and nothing I make ever comes out looking very clean.
Well, that's a big part of what I love about this team. is how different of an angle each of us is coming from, and how I feel like both of you have accomplished so much in the area of Nerf modding, but the things that you do are so different from each other. But I also see you all the time talking and learning from each other.
Absolutely.
About stuff that you're doing.
That's half the fun. Yeah.
I would say I've learned quite a lot from Jolt. Jolt is my internal specialist. I reach out to Jolt a lot for that.
The number of times
you likewise.
The number of times I've had like a part sitting on my bench and like it was just in a picture that I took, and Jolt is like, "Oh, that's like the catch, the like trigger lock from this random blaster from 2009." And it's just like, "What?
That's my first superpower."
Yeah. Jolt has that superpower. If you need an internals specialist, Jolt is the guy.
Jolt is the guy.
If absolutely. I've seen it, I'll recognize it. Chances are.
Jolt, what would you say is your most well-known mod?
That absolutely has to be Oops All Internals, which was hilariously Vile's idea. It was supposed to be a total freaking shitpost of an idea. And then it was given Mod of the Week.
Yes.
And I got my first ever tag in a game with it.
That's right.
I never expected it to go as far as it has.
I made a joke. So if just for clarification, I sent Jolt an entire like box just filled with internals of scrapped blasters that I had. And I made the thing of, Jolt, you should absolutely make it with nothing but these internals that I send you. I found out that Jolt didn't even use the internals, I think, that I sent, but used internals in general and created the Oops All Internal Blaster.
Amazing.
I used a few of the things in there. I think there are a couple pieces of deploy.
Okay,
I still
they all blend together.
Right.
I still also think about what is that shell firing shotgun?
Trilogy.
The trilogy,
the one that I did with the Lego and
your Lego and hot glue trilogy magazine that would feed shells in that Domachevsky wound up using as inspiration to make a 3D printable version.
Yes.
And that's the kind of thing, is it's like you're out here working in your basement with hot glue and garbage, and everybody is inspired by what you're doing. Because the things that you turn up are just wild.
Actually, I would say for Jolt as well, if you're looking to do a Retalicon, Jolt has the best guide out for a Retalicon.
Jolt is the guy.
Oh, yes, that is his area of expertise.
That was Jolt's king.
For anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's taking the Recon, which has older style internals that are very limited in terms of what you can do with them, but has cooler shell colors that aren't available in the Retaliator, which is a blaster that's shaped the same but has better internals, and getting those better internals to fit in the old shells, which is a whole thing. But Jolt has really sort of mastered that art.
It's something I genuinely enjoy.
Yeah,
I just built a direct plunger speedload 6 for Vile.
Yes.
Oh, I know. That thing looks so cool.
I fired it on stream. It was great. It actually feels fantastic. I like it.
Beautiful.
Glad to hear it.
So that's the short version of who everybody is. Well, I guess I didn't talk about myself. I'm KT, which stands for Kinetic Turtle, which is a name that I've used online for a very, very long time. And my channel is Family Foam Sport. And I am a modder, but it's not my focus. A lot of what I try to do is communicating about the hobby specifically to families and to parents who I think can be really overwhelmed trying to figure out like what's good, what's not good, and what is going to actually like give a kid a good experience. And from the perspective of the hobby, I feel like we grow a hobby by making sure kids have good first experiences. And so that's kind of my main goal, is to get kids in the door of the hobby. And then when they're excited, when they learn about modding and they want to start to do this stuff, what are the most accessible mod projects? What are the options for like higher power stuff that kids can still handle? And those are the kind of questions that I try to tackle and try to communicate. Communicating to families, to parents, from the perspective of a hobbyist. And so that's my angle into the show. As the only actual parent on the show, I've got two kids who are both involved in the hobby. One of them built his own skewer, the 3D printed design by Taffy of Caramel Designs, and has been to a bunch of higher power games and absolutely loves it. So yeah, that's who we all are. And you should also check out Grimm's Nerf Works, the fourth member of our team, like I said earlier, who is not here to speak for himself, but also does really great work. So today we released our first video. And how do y'all feel about that?
I thought it came out great, personally.
I think it came out pretty good. We had a lot of issues with audio, but other than that, people seem to enjoy it, so that makes me happy.
Yeah, I feel really good about the layout of the show. I feel like we portrayed information really well. I feel like we selected our stories well. And I think that as we refine our editing concept, because Grimm's did great work and did a lot of work.
Yes, he stayed up quite many hours.
And as we keep doing episodes and sort of decide how we want the show to look and refine it and start to animate some of the transitions and stuff, I think it's going to really, and fix the audio problems. I think it's going to be really, really clean.
Number one thing, fix the audio.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I would say as well, in my case, doing some of the recording, I actually did it three times just because I was like, God, that didn't sound right. It felt weird having a script.
Three times, that's it?
Yeah. Well, when I normally do videos, I kind of just go off the cuff. I don't really, and I probably spend all of 10 to 15, 20 minutes maybe recording, and then the rest is all in post. That's where I spend most of my time. So this time around, trying to write a script, have points to really talk about and things like that, I didn't want to go too overboard to make sure that time wasn't, you know, we weren't going too far on our first pilot episode, things like that, trying to keep it straight and to the point as well. I think that was trying to find that groove is going to be a thing for us to find, you know, obviously. But for the first go, I thought it was actually really good for what it was.
Agreed. I have a theater background, and so reading off a script is not really a problem for me, but I'm used to reading off a script. When I do, one of the things that's unique on my channel, I do the 1 minute reviews, and I used to improvise them and then edit them down, and it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. And I finally just started scripting them, and it was so much easier because I knew that all the things I needed to hit were in the script. And I knew as long as I got a good take of everything in the script, I could put together a good video. And so I took a similar approach to each of my segments on this. But it's interesting when I'm writing the news story as opposed to one of my reviews, where in the reviews, my opinion is the thing that's supposed to be out there. When I'm doing the news stories, I'm trying to keep my opinion not completely out of it, but mostly out of it.
Yeah,
right?
Minimized.
Yeah, because that's what the podcast is for.
Right.
This is where we can complain about stuff we think is dumb. But in the news place, it's just like, this exists. Here are the facts about it. And here's why it's relevant. And that was my main thing, is it's like, the thing that I can offer is, why is this relevant?
Mm-hmm.
That's the most interesting part, I think.
I found that too.
Yeah.
I have actually a hard time reading off of a script. It just doesn't sound authentic. The only problem is either way, whether I'm using a script or not, it usually takes me a lot more takes than it really ought to. I tend to stumble over my words. So this was definitely an experience.
Mm-hmm. It all comes with practice,
I found that too. I found it similar. I kept stumbling over my words when I had a written script. And what I had to do was I actually did bullet points instead that just kind of had some talking points, like the main talking points. And then when I did that and changed it up, for me, it became very easy. I had it sitting in front of me.
More of an outline.
Yeah, it's an outline. I found, because I did very good in things like speech classes, and even theater wasn't really a problem, but it was remembering them. And a lot of times I would feel them, but for something that's kind of straight and to the point, I need the bullet points very quickly. just to make sure I hit them and move on, and I don't waste time, because if I try to be too much like myself, I absolutely can kind of overtake and ramble. So
that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, I think I think we did a great job for our first episode. It feels really good.
We're a little biased, but we think we did well.
We are a little biased. If you're listening, if you're listening to this and you have an opinion on this, you should definitely let us know in the video comments or the comments to this video, or find us on Discord or whatever, because we definitely want to know how people are feeling about it, because the point of it is to convey information to the audience, not for us to just listen to it and think it's awesome, which is also nice. But the point is for y'all to get the information and feel entertained and informed. So definitely let us know what you think.
Exactly. We're very open to criticism and suggestions.
Mm-hmm. And praise. Praise is good, too.
If we weren't open to praise, that might be a bit of a problem.
Cool. Okay, so moving forward, what I kind of want to do is just go through everything that we talked about in the show. I have it listed here, not necessarily in exactly the same order that we did it in the show. I imagine some of these things we're probably going to want to talk about for a while, and some of them will be kind of be like, eh. There's a few things in here that were sort of honorable mentions that didn't make it onto the show itself, but were in our list of news, but we just kind of cut for time, or no one was really interested in talking about them because they're not that important. And we can start off like we did in the show with the first party, as we're calling it, Nerf brand news. And the first thing we talked about was the Elite Junior series. And that's one that I took for relatively obvious reasons. I have kids and I'm with kids the most. For my part, I still don't have all the names of them put together, but it's the pump action one with the cylinder. That one showed up in the mail pretty early on. And even my kids, who play with pretty advanced equipment already, like they both own at least one 3D printed blaster themselves, they loved them because they're so toy-like. And even like a Fortnite blaster is still shaped like a real weapon in a lot of ways that these aren't. And the low power makes them really easy to just like play with in the house and not worry about. And I just feel like I'm really impressed with this line.
I was going to ask, I think you're
one designed to do.
I was going to ask, you're the only one here that has them, actually. And yeah. I was going to say, what do you really feel like with them? When you say low power, because we're pretty familiar with FPS numbers, what do you mean by low power? Because in-strike levels are, 70 FPS.
Yeah.
Have you actually had a chance to test them?
Well, elite levels are 70. But
okay, so elite levels. Elite levels.
You mentioned in-strike. They're about in-strike, right? They're a little bit under elite levels.
Okay, so they're in like the 50-ish range, 50 to 60.
50 to 60, yeah.
Okay.
Which, for your living room, is great. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're actually trying to shoot at someone in your living room, that's way better. 70 is fine. 70 is fine, and I'll always portray that as safe for household play. Even like a X shot, like a Reflex 6 shoots a little bit hotter than that, is usually fine for indoors. But those numbers change when you have a 6-year-old involved. Mm-hmm. That's been my experience consistently. And this really hits the spot because they are designed. It feels like, and I haven't opened mine up yet. I know other people have opened them up, and we can talk about the like slam fire mechanism thing and all this stuff, but they feel like they were designed to operate at these numbers, not like they were designed to operate hotter and they're just bad. Right. I've never had experiences with like darts farting out of the barrels. It always fires correctly because it feels like it's designed to work at these numbers. It's got a very short prime stroke. And they just work really well, and they fit kids' hands perfectly. Unlike like Busby grips, right? Which are like big or small, but not in a way that makes sense for like a kid's hand or an extra large hand. They're just weird.
Yeah, with Busby grips, they don't just make them small. They make them very cramped in weird areas,
right?
Or have a random thing gutting out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're always kind of strange.
Exactly. So these are actually shrunk grips that fit.
They look comfortable for their size.
Human hands. Yeah. Like if I grab it, I can only get 3 fingers inside the grip guard. those 3 fingers are very comfortable, but it's not meant for me, right? It's not designed. It's not designed for my hands. I just think they knocked it out of the park. In terms of the concept that they were
one
going
thing
for.
I would have to say, the color palette is phenomenal.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's I would good. Say
it's good in the same really way that the new rival is good, right? Like I feel like it's more related to that family of colors, and I've missed that in Nerf so much.
It looks so good. It reminds me the most, I think, of the old Atom Blasters, like the Reactor and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
you're
blue,
right.
Green and orange. It just pops. Yeah,
that's so good.
And kind I of do... an almost 90 aesthetic. Late 90s.
Yep, absolutely. And I do want to mention real quick, because Jolt, you're the one that brought this up to me, that the same blaster that I was I keep talking about it. I should just look up which one it is. Oh, except there's no
links.
It's
the pump action revolver.
It's the pump action revolver. I just can't remember which one is which yet. I haven't done my 1-minute reviews, so I haven't memorized them all yet. but the you said someone opened it up and it looked like it had one of those. There's been a number of Nerf products that have come out recently that seem like they have slam fire mechanisms in them, but like one thing or another is weird. Like the Viper Strike that I sent you.
The Viper Strike, yeah, the Roblox Snake Sniper.
Yep.
And the Dino Squad Armor Strike had this issue. It appears that the pump action revolver for the Elite Junior is just a reskin of the Dino Squad Armor Strike, and it carries that same issue with it, where essentially Hasbro has put the mechanism for slam fire inside the blaster. It's in there, but in the case of the Armor Strike and this new Elite Junior blaster, you're able to pull the trigger too far, which seems to be flexing the catch in a way that stops it from catching properly. So the slam fire mechanism doesn't work. The solution to this is quite simple, and that's to put a stopper behind your trigger so you can only pull it partially, and then it slam fires just fine. But it begs the question why Hasbro didn't do this in the first place.
That is interesting. I mean, it seems like maybe it's something where they were copying a previous design and then just like
I'm
didn't
thinking
worry
that's
about that
what
detail.
It is. It's drag and drop, and they just never bothered to fix it because they didn't care enough.
Yeah, I think it really is, because when I opened it up, because Jolt reached out to me on the Armor Strike originally for a 3D printed part maybe to fix this issue. But when I actually looked at it, the simplest solution was to drill a small hole behind where the spring is for the trigger and then just force a little screw in there, and then you actually have it adjustable to wherever you find the sweet spot, and then you just leave it, close it up, and call it a day. It's almost like it was a it's like a design flaw as well. Like they did drag and drop, but they weren't really caring whether or not the slam fire worked. I don't really understand the whole point behind it.
Weird. So on the Elite Junior revolver, there's a really interesting effect that happens with this, though, because don't quote me on this, because I've played with it a handful of times, but this was my experience. And someone's going to be like, oh, mine doesn't do that. Maybe it's a weird flaw. But you can move the pump even after it's primed.
Interesting.
I actually find that to be a good thing, because a younger kid who's not used to keeping track of the status of the things on their blaster may not know why they can't prime it.
I would argue that this is an issue, because when you don't have a slide lock on a slam fire blaster, even though the mechanism is not wanting to work properly, it'll still do this. Where if you don't have the double prime lock, essentially, what can happen is if you're not holding the pump forward and you pull the trigger will pull the slide back instead of deactivating the catch.
That's
which
true.
Which could cause
That's
a frustrating
true.
Situation.
Well, the slide is sprung, though. Wait. Now I feel like I have to go get it. Okay. I don't know. I we'll have to look into it more. I feel like on a kid's blaster like that, the parts being able to move freely is beneficial.
It's like a fidget thing.
The other, I know that the little two-shot Smart AR one, that one would absolutely have a spring return and would be fine, because those don't have slam fire.
Mm. All right.
So I think you're probably thinking of those.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah, because so I have two of the Elite Junior Blasters, and I've only opened one up so far. I haven't even... You saw the other one in the package in the video. I haven't even opened it up, because I usually unbox them for my one-minute reviews on camera. And the other one came in generic Amazon packaging. So I was like, well, I can't really do an unboxing on this. So I just opened it. We've been playing with it. Anyway... So that anyone have any other thoughts about Elite Junior? No. I think it's as a parent, I think it's great. I think they really got it.
I think we're not the target audience, but for that's also what true. They're supposed to do, they do great.
That's one of those conversations that always comes up, right? It's like, you know,
Guri doesn't
not
hit 150 FPS,
right? But it's not for you.
Yeah,
if you need to shoot 150 FPS, there are other things for you. This is for
precisely.
This is for the future 150 FPS shooters of the world.
Right.
Yep.
So, cool. Next thing on our list is the Stego Duo. Wait, is that the next thing on my list? Because I'm looking at the wrong document. It is the Stego Duo.
It is, yes.
I don't know how much there's to say about this. It's literally two Stego Smashes. I do like the new colors. And it's cool to see that the Dino Squad line isn't extinct. My line that people seem to really like in the show.
yeah,
I don't know.
I think I'm curious if they've changed it up. Was this the one that was also was it solvent welded on the original one?
I believe it was either solvent welded or clipped or both.
I don't remember. Yeah. We'll see if they, because I've noticed that sometimes with later reskins they might go lazy on solvent weld. So if it was previously solvent welded, I'm curious to see if it's not solvent welded, but just clipped on this one,
right,
on these new reskins. That is something I am curious about, because they're essentially internal wise, you know, a night finder. They're just a plunger too, but a catch pretty much. So
yep,
a lot of people like them as great little plinkers. You can throw a bigger spring, you know, if you want to shoot a little bit harder, but you know, from what I understand, they like you're saying, they look good, and We'll see when they start getting into people's hands.
Yeah.
Okay, hopefully they've stopped with making them hard to get open. I remember Captain Xavier was so frustrated with opening one in his K-26 episode that in the end he wanted his K-26 back and literally just went to the bandsaw.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. Well, time will tell.
Yep.
Although, to be fair, however it was the first time around, I almost guarantee you the reason they did this series is so they didn't have to make a new mold.
Oh, yeah.
They made a new mold for that one part. Everything that I can see, it looks completely identical except for that back, the scales.
Mm-hmm.
The Dimetrodon scales. Anyway.
I mean, it is, like, lazy, but, like, also... I like color variety. That's always cool.
Totally. I have to admit, I was collecting the whole Dino Squad series just because I liked them so much until the Armor Strike came out. Hmm. And I just disliked that one so much, I just kind of stopped.
It's not worth the money they charge for it.
I was just aesthetically, I was really displeased with it compared to how great the Rex Rampage and the Stego Smash and the Triceroblast all looked.
Aesthetically plain.
Yeah, and the if the dart holder isn't full of darts, it looks awful.
Yeah,
and then you have to stick darts in it and ruin those darts to display it.
Pretty much.
Like, come on.
And this is why I used one only for integration purposes with the Rex Rampage one that I'm working on, which I still got to finish. But yeah, it's basically just fodder for integration.
Totally.
I basically just bring mine to events for Awful's rounds as a loner.
It's the new Centurion for integrations.
Oh,
maybe.
I wouldn't know that. Centurion's like king levels of integration.
Well, also because people have been so used to the things that the Centurion can offer for so long.
Now, I do like the stock on the Armor Strike because the dart storage and the fact that it has a in-strike rail both top and bottom.
Yeah.
I think people are sleeping on it, and they could absolutely use that for mods. I think people need to understand.
I think you want to let.
I
think you want to.
So it didn't hit your wrist.
I think you want to let people sleep on it so you can thrift them later.
I haven't seen them. People aren't giving them up yet.
Yeah.
They're too expensive. We'll Nobody bought them.
True, fair.
So the next thing on the list is probably not something we need to talk about a bunch. There's a new Roblox Synchro Shot. It's a micro shot. We did not put it in the new show because it's a micro shot. There's a lot of these.
It's a fucking jolt.
The only thing that I thought was interesting about this is that it's clear.
It is clear at that.
It has clear plastic.
It does look kind of cool, to be honest.
Yeah. There's
just another Jolt reskin.
It is just another Jolt reskin.
Yeah.
Like every blaster, according to some people.
It's also a Roblox one. So
the thing about the thing that fans
might be interested.
The thing that throws me about these Roblox blasters, right? I go on TikTok and I make these videos. I got asked to review the Boxy Buster more than almost any other blaster. And apparently the code that you get in game, whatever the game is that the Boxy Buster is in, it's one of the most powerful weapons in that game.
Oh.
So people buy the Boxy Buster just to get the code. Whereas,
remember
for
if it was powerful or not. I remember that a friend of mine, Lightning Eagle 14, he has that and he has it in game. I forget how good it was, but I think that is probably the main draw.
Yeah.
Because I have the micro shot. It's not worth the $10.
The micro shot. I haven't done the review on it yet. I'm going to. It's so bad, though. It's the least comfortable micro shot I've ever held. And I've held a lot of uncomfortable micro shots.
It's impossible.
I just don't understand micro shots in general. That's why I pick them up from the Goodwill outlet and just send them to Jolt.
I understand them because I like hoarding jolts. That's the exclusive reason.
You got to live up to your name.
I get the collector appeal. Someday, Jolt,
yeah,
we should build
that.
You we should build you a throne
of
made
jolts.
Out of jolts.
Yes.
Someday,
micro shots and jolts.
Someday
only.
We're all gonna be at a Nerf convention and we're gonna present you with a throne made out of jolts.
Your politics bore me.
Exactly. Anyway, moving on from that. So I guess my only point is maybe the synchro shot's gonna be good in game. Don't know. Don't play Roblox.
Yeah.
Next thing on the list, which I'm actually really excited about, the new D&D series. Now, before we even get into the blasters, there's been some trouble in D&D land lately. You're familiar with this world, right? Right, Vile?
Oh, yeah.
Jolt, okay. I don't know how... I've
never played Dungeons & Dragons. I'm very sheltered.
So... Well, you might not get to. So one of the things going on in the world of D&D is, of course, Hasbro owns Wizards of the Coast, which owns D&D and Magic. Those are their primary properties. And Hasbro, as Hasbro does, has decided that D&D is not being monetized enough. I'm sure a big reason for this is the popularity of Stranger Things and how that has sort of... I mean, D&D has always continued to be popular, but Stranger Things has put it so much more in the public eye recently, and its popularity has skyrocketed among sort of the general population. And so it is, I understand a company like Hasbro being like, we should be getting more money out of this property. One of the ways that they're trying to do that is by changing, D&D has always existed under an open license that allows anybody to create D&D content and profit off of it. And this has always benefited D&D in general. You can create D&D content, but the person trying to consume that content is still going to have to go buy an official player's guide.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need all the core mechanic information in order to make this content make sense. But now they're trying to change that. And if you make over a certain amount of money doing D&D content, you're expected to license it. And they're going to presumably sue people if they don't pay.
And it sounds like they're also going to go back. They're going to, what was it? I remember something, because if you're not familiar as well, there's a very, very large D&D community or content creator called Critical Role.
Yep.
And they have been producing a ton of material for the D&D like franchise, basically, of their own content, which probably brought in a huge amount of players to the franchise. And what's really crazy is that if the way that some of this has been read out on this change is that they might actually start going back on over the years that, say, Critical Role has been out and start basically back charging them, essentially. There's a potential. They're, the way that it is and the way that it's kind of worded is a little sketchy.
Yeah.
And it's scary because it's like they've, like I said, they've probably brought a thousands upon thousands of people to the franchise, and now they might just be sued by Hasbro or Wizards of the Coast, essentially for royalties.
Yeah,
and it's
sounds
insane.
To me like it's just yet another greedy company looking to make a quick buck.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so the thing that's interesting that I've always thought was interesting about the D&D blasters, and so far we've only had the three. What are they? Dragon Power. They called it Dragon Power, right? Dragon Force is the band.
Yeah.
Dragon Power is the blaster line. And they were, I like them. I'm not taking them to games, but I do think they were very pretty. Very pretty blasters.
It looks really nice, and it's a fun plinker.
Totally.
Yeah, I want them for integration purposes. That's
I'm sure
all
I'm gonna say. You do. I have the revolver. I did a full review on it when it first came out.
I need to get one of those. They look really nice.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And I think that that's one of the potentials of a range like this. And the fact that Hasbro owns the IP means that it fits into this plan of theirs of wanting to get more money out of it. And it's hard because it's like, if you're going to try to get more money out of D&D, this is a great way to do it. You've got these other product lines, make related crossover stuff, like awesome. Yeah. These blasters,
unfortunately, they're using it to make $11 jolts with barely any paint.
Well, okay, yes. So, that's one of the things, right? Is the first line was gorgeous. The new line, I'm not sure yet. I talked in my segment about the ties that the actual things have to the content, to the film that's coming out soon. Honor Among Thieves. And I like the attention to detail. I mentioned the Thembrichod's like belly that's visible mm-hmm. on the blaster, but the blaster is a Diamondista. It is the Diamondista, for anyone not familiar, I showed it in the video, but it's literally an elastic cord that you pull back and you like stick a dart in very gently. Cause if you push the dart too hard, it'll like set off the catch. And so you have to like gently tuck a dart in and then you pull the trigger and the elastic cord just sort of chucks the dart out very gently. So, you know, I don't have my hands on Thembrichod, but if it's the same mechanism, even if it's an upgraded version of the same mechanism, it's hard to imagine it being much better. And it looks to
be the same mechanism to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to tell, like, are the bow arms longer? Is the elastic stronger? Da da da, but it looks like pretty much the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the other two blasters are, like you said, it's a micro shot and it's a double micro shot.
The double one actually looks good. The two shot one has potential. It looks decent. It could be a lot of fun, but the single shot one, there's just virtually no paint on it. It's like a bare. It's like an unpainted mini. Basically,
and
for considering $11,
considering mm-hmm. how powerful and like a big deal the character it's based on is,
yes,
it's such a weird choice.
Oh my
it's
god,
it's so weird.
You got to remember here that the real it's super powerful in its price tag.
For any, yeah, exactly. For anybody who's not familiar with D&D, let's just say that it's if you're going to make a Marvel line of Nerf. Thanos is a jolt.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
All you're going to get. That's basically what we're looking at when we're talking about characters here.
Absolutely.
And how big of a character that they just decided to slam into a micro shot jolt. It was really
very strange choice. Very, very
yes,
strange choice.
Very strange. It should have been flagship if you were going to do that, to be honest.
Yeah. So the one thing I am very excited about from this line, though, is the return of Melee.
Those look really good.
We're getting a sword and an axe. They're based on weapons carried by the character in the movie, and I don't know those characters, but they look great, and they really look like the old Nerf Melee. that we haven't seen.
I'm very hopeful for that.
When's now, the, so we got some. There were some Fortnite Melee toys.
Those had not been the slightest. They were not great handles.
Yeah,
they were dangerous. I don't know how they could have gotten away with that because they absolutely were like. Sure, you have a small piece of foam, but then it's right. surrounded by a much harder. It could have been technically considered a soft plastic, but it's hard enough that, and we know how like siblings or some kids are. I was that kind
You're
of kid
hit
where
your,
I'm
you
gonna
hit the
swing.
Sibling with it, he's gonna cry.
I'm swinging for the fences. I'm trying to hit the home run, and you know the person I'm swinging at is my brother, kind of thing. Like I and seeing that was just that's a big no because I'm looking at literally all of the. Swords and the battle axe and stuff like that and the claymore that they used to offer. I have them all sitting in my corner right now and they're fantastic.
Yeah.
So I really, really am hopeful that they are doing the exact same thing with these because they both look amazing.
My biggest concern is I'm wondering if the handle of the axe, much like those Fortnite pickaxes, is going to be plastic. I'm worried about that because it looks a little bit shiny.
I have seen somebody say that it is plastic. Now, there is, like in the handles of some of the swords, there is a plastic inner lining and it's surrounded by foam. So
which, that's fine.
I hope that's what they mean when they brought it up, that it's going to have a plastic handle. I said, I really hope that is it and it's more old school and not. Like they did with Fortnite.
If they do, that is a huge deal because we haven't seen the Fortnite ones were so bad, we haven't seen Melee like that since Zombie Strike.
Yeah.
When we had like the knives, we didn't even have anything that big.
Well, they had the one sword.
Well, that was the one
that
was
2018 or so. They re-released, I think, the Vendetta Sword and the Marauder on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was a more recent run of them.
That's cool. So yeah, I'm excited about the potential for that. Moving on again, we have the Nerf Elite 2.0 Wild Edition Storm Charge. And this was kind of funny one to watch come about, right? Because it was a leak where there was a video and it just happened to be hanging on the back of someone's wall.
Yeah,
and
Nerf
everyone
Taiwan,
was like,
what was he even
talking about in that video?
I don't even remember.
It's like nobody even cared about whatever that was. They were like, hey, there's a thing back there.
Pretty much. Now every time he uploads, it's just people hawking his background to see what they can find.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, he does, a lot of times Nerf Taiwan does get first grabs at a lot of the new stuff coming out, obviously. Yeah. But that one, I remember everybody, like, all the images of things rotated around, people trying to make out what was a grip and what was a barrel. And yeah. But that's it looked fun. Good. I will say what we have now actually got is actually a really good looking blaster, I would say.
Fantastic. I think this is going to be another winner for the Elite 2.0 line, right next to the Moto Blitz and the Trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's basically going to be the new Strife, well, at least of Nerf brand, because it looks like it's going to be decently ergonomic, mag-fed, have some nice tactical points. My only concern is, I'm wondering where the battery tray is in this, because there's not all that much space.
Mm.
Also, the cage location, for those of us who are interested in modding it, because that was a point that was brought up. Now, I just got done modding the Fortnite SMG, and the cage is on the other side. Now, the geometry is very similar to a Strife, but obviously reversed on what side of the shell it's going to be connected to, which is a bit of a pain, but we can work around that.
Now, Vile, it also could be that it's just reversed where the motors are to make it easier to solder, because if you'll remember, the Desolator has the cage flipped, but it's still on the correct side of the blaster.
It's true. That's actually very true. So we have to, obviously, once we get it, we'll know whether it's like the SMG or whether it's like the Desolator. So we'll find out, obviously, when we get our hands on it, because we know for a fact we're first thing we're going to do is say, what's that geometry of the flywheel cage? So.
No matter what it is, Buff Daddy will have a cage for it within a week, I guarantee you.
Probably.
That seems likely. That is likely.
Buff Daddy gets them out pretty fast. I will say there are some workarounds, and if it does have the same geometry, understand, and it say it is similar to the SMG, you can technically still use a Strife cage. Just for those out there, say if you have a Strife cage sitting around that you want to use, you just do need some spacers or shims or something like that to space it out. I actually did all that with the SMG and found out it worked actually just fine. But it's just if you don't have it, wait for a printed one.
As far as price, this is actually going to be like on halfway decent price. $30, if you think about it, the Strife came with no attachments, and it was $20 when it came out.
Right.
This comes with a larger magazine, plus a stock in a barrel for $30.
Yeah.
Well, 31, you know, 30 and change. Honestly, like, I'm looking at that.
What like was the... deal. Actually, Joel, you might know, what was the Strife that came with the battle camo, that blue and white like battle camo one?
That one was very overpriced. I think that one went for $40.
Okay, gotcha.
Which actually hilariously came with, like, I think the same attachments as this, didn't it? Except minus the foregrip.
Yeah, it was
pretty much
did.
Similar.
The battle camo stuff in general, in my experience, has always felt at like more cheaply made than normal versions of the same blasters.
Grim was actually just talking about this with me the other day.
Yeah.
He said that he had an original, like, they had different runs of the battle camo Strife, and the earlier ones were fine, but the later ones feel like crap.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know at one point they went through some of the designs. Like, I know that the Amazon hammer shots are made slightly differently than the original hammer shots. They did make new molds for some parts.
They did make new molds for the Strife, and you can tell because they actually changed the tactical rail tooth, where they swapped out the little spring-loaded
The rail tooth is like the dead giveaway. If a blaster had the sprung rail tooth and it moved to something without it, they probably changed other stuff too.
They did, most likely. And I'm wondering, these might be when they changed production to India, because I know a lot of newer productions of older blasters, like they did this with, say, the AccuStrike Quadrant and the Modulus Mediator. I actually have one, and you'll notice, like, the orange, the plastic's a different color, and the quality's a lot worse. The Mediator, even that I found, was at an Amazon return store, because the quality control was so poor that they managed to screw up the lock that stops you from priming it unless you've installed the magwell.
Oh my god.
That's like the Kronos, actually, from Amazon exclusives. Exactly. So there are two variants of Kronoses out there with their priming grips. So, like, the Worker T-Pull actually is a very easy install for some of the molds, but you don't quite know what you have until you open them up. And and one of them actually has a plastic rib or shelf that is slightly different on another one. And all the ones from Amazon have the shelf that doesn't quite fit. And you either have to cut the plastic or cut the T-pull to make it work.
And also, like, they just feel cheaper. They tend to have worse seals. The one that I got is the green one, and there was plastic flash on the breech and the front of the barrel. That's yikes.
some of them unfortunately can't. And I will say, even the Kronoses, I do like their paint themes. I've used them multiple times because I think they're beautiful looking colors. But there is some questionable, like, quality in that. Well, yeah, quality control. Some of the grips don't quite align properly. Like when
that's
you go to actually
Hasbro in general lately.
Yeah, and it is very similar though. You go to see stuff that is coming out of India, and weirdly, their quality control is just not up to par as the quality control out of China for some reason. I don't know why, but yeah, we've been seeing that more and more lately.
Will, on a semi-related note, we also have this, I don't know if you call it a leak or just this is weird. The Elite 2.0 double punch. And honestly,
this thing is weird.
Until someone found a listing for it, I think in France for 45 euros, I thought it was just a weird Photoshop job that someone did for a graphic design. I honestly did not think this was a real blaster at first. But then now there's a listing for it. And I don't know. I don't think we have any clue what this actually is.
Oh, that's interesting.
It looks like a dual magwell is what it looks like to me.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm
wondering if it's like maybe the new Rhino Fire and they've repurposed the mechanism or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at it because the only real thing, you know, it's funny. I tried looking up the website that had the listing on it because there was also one that seemed to come out of a listing on Toys R Us Canada. And interestingly, it's not actually going to a link anymore, which is surprising. It seems to just not. Oh, that's what it was. It was just the image of, because what it was, where our sort of leak came from was oh god, what do they call him? The Nerf mascot character.
Yeah, yeah.
Murph.
It was Murph holding it.
Murph was holding it, and it's
you
very.
You can only see half of the thing.
Yeah,
yeah. It's almost like what I took from it when I could. What I would say I'm seeing is it's like a Rhino Fire, but instead of the magwells being pointed outward, they're both pointed down.
Mm. And it's like an actual carbine rather than that weird like turret thing.
Could this be answer to what's the Dart Zone blaster with the two mags that just came
out?
The Vulcanator. Could this be an answer to the Vulcanator?
Perhaps. It definitely looks like it would be, because I see two barrels and I see it's mag fed, so that unless they found some kind of weird mechanism that can load darts into alternating barrels or something.
Well, has always ended poorly. So
I don't think I've ever seen that done.
Well, yeah, because we have, what are the double mag blasters?
How would you make two barrels feed from one mag?
It sounds like something that would not, like, you could theoretically do it, but it would not be worth it. You'd be doing a lot more work, and you could have just put another barrel on.
Yeah, it's quote-unquote works, but is it worth is the juice worth the squeeze?
Exactly, and no is the answer.
Yeah, I am curious, though, because from the image, it has, actually, if you remember from the Rhino Fire, it had these rubber, like, grommet pieces that were on the front barrels while they articulated front, forward, and backwards for firing.
Yep.
I'm wondering if that's what it is, and it's basically, it's a double punch, and they're supposed to be punching forward, and is that going to be a white grommet as opposed to the black grommets that were on there?
All right.
I'm very curious if that's what it is, because the image is clearly not of the real thing. It's clearly like a rendered image. So I'm curious.
It doesn't tell us much.
Yeah.
We know very little. But that's a really interesting take. That's a really interesting take. That would be cool. I'd like that.
I would be interested in it. I think it would be a cool thing to mess with.
It's something that the community might get enjoyment out of. The silhouette alone of what we can see looks really cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, and so the next thing, and Vile, you covered this in the show, the Nerf Rival Forerunner.
Yes.
Which is the fourth entry in the quote-unquote AccuRival line.
Yeah, so we now have the Forerunner, and it was funny because right before we released, I started noticing all these other review videos dropping, because the only one we originally had when I started writing was Nerf Taiwan.
Right.
And then Walcom was able to pump one out really quickly, and I was like, okay, great, I could mention Walcom. And then right after I finished recording, everybody's dropping one, and I'm like, okay, we didn't get this out. But it's a sitch, like, you know, we were mentioning it earlier, the color is really nice. I really like the AccuRival color.
I love this scheme. Line. I think it's so beautiful.
The rounds, pop. They are nice in shape. They're rubbery. I want more of them.
Yeah, I would say it's really nice because, you know, a lot of people kept saying, oh, Rival's dying. But I'm actually very glad that it's not. It's such a good brand because it's in that, like, higher age bracket, you know, off the shelf, very good performance range. They're good for HVZs. They're good for conversions, obviously, like what I like to do. They are a very good brand to keep around. Like, they should be a very good one to keep around. I would think they were crazy to get rid of them.
Yeah.
But you know, when we look at the Forerunner, it is nothing new. It's a 12 round internal mag, you know,
it's just a Kronos inside, or a Takedown, or Saturn
Takedown. Well, it has a similar. True.
That's
but
the one thing that mystifies me as to why they wouldn't put that in there.
It doesn't have slam fire until the two of you figure out where to stick a screw and like a wad of hot glue and like a band-aid.
Yeah,
and now it has slam fire.
We're gonna reverse engineer it again. But like, for me, I don't think it's a bad blaster. I think it's actually a good blaster. It's the sidearm. You know, Walcom was trying to bring it up because mostly Walcom's being the first one that I really saw. I haven't had a chance to see anybody else's look at it, and I don't have one in hand. I think it's a great sidearm, like a pump action, similar to the Takedown. I think it's really good. It's just got more capacity, right?
Yeah.
It's fire, and even with what Walcom was showing, it's actually firing slightly hotter. So the old Rival was normally, you know, out of the box around 85, 90. They advertised 90 originally. And even in Walcom's video, they were hitting closer to 100, 100 plus in some cases. I was actually like, that's slightly hotter than what I'm.
It's not even like seeing. Just his either, because I watched Xbox's quick look earlier and his was doing the same. It was getting 100 to 105.
Yeah, so that's a new one for Rival, is getting a little bit stronger on their power output. I'm very curious to see if it's based on the springs they're using or based on, actually, we saw that it does have venting in the barrel.
Yes.
So, which is surprising, because we were talking about this is a hobby thing where we would, a lot of time, when we found out that there was a pressure buildup in the barrels, if you drill out the barrels, it helps to relieve the pressure in front of whatever dart or rival, you know, round or whatever. It would relieve that pressure and help to keep it at a higher velocity and not slow it down before it exits the barrel.
Interesting to see that in an off-the-shelf product.
Yeah, starting to see that in an off-the-shelf product is kind of a new one for Hasbro. And I'm wondering if they're either, maybe they found it on their own, or maybe they are taking a look at what we do in the hobby.
Well, that was one of the discussions.
This is supposed to be the AccuRival line, so that they would have been putting most of their effort into trying to make it more accurate.
True.
Well, I mean, one of the discussions when the original AccuRival set came out was borrowed design language from hobby designs, and how much more similar the way the magazine goes in looks a lot like the Rival Burn, and and the way that the grip is designed, and just the overall design language, especially of the Pathfinder, but mm-hmm. also of the way that the Fate was built, and how it's that compares T-pole. to our T-pole pistols that are very right. common in the 3D printed world.
I would say it's very interesting. One other thing I wanted to add on the sidearm part is that this really actually does a better job than the Takedown did. This is because mm-hmm. it has one crucial thing that the Takedown never had, and that's a sling point.
Yeah.
So you can actually sling this on your body. You don't have to make some kind of specialized holster.
Very true.
Yeah, I would say the ergonomics are a little bit better, and that sling point is important. So
it looks like they took inspiration from... Because if you look at what people have done, you look at the Saturn and the Takedown, what's the first 3D printed kit you get? Replacement foregrip to make it have better purchase on it. Look what they did there. And then make it into the normal straight grip instead of the swept back one. And they did both of those things.
It's interesting how I think the sling point is a really interesting point, because that is such a simple thing to add that can completely change the possibilities of what an off-the-shelf blaster can do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You literally can use that sling point with an old shoelace, and now you're carrying a second blaster, and now you have a backup, and now you win a round that you would have lost.
Yeah, higher and even higher capacity. Like I was saying, you're adding, and Walcom covered a lot of this. I didn't watch Xboxes, but... the higher capacity, that sling point, saying that if you're in the middle of reloading and you have this as a quick sidearm that is always ready to go, you can outlast a fight and live to move on to the next thing. I would say that they actually are paying attention to us, whether they want to admit it or not, because there's a few things, when, and Jolt brought it up, and some of the things I've covered, Walcom, everybody here, there's a lot of really key things that we've been arguing and harping about for quite a while now. And it's almost like somebody's putting that effort in and putting those little key things that are very simple to add into this stuff,
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, okay. So it sounds like we all agree this one's a winner.
I would say it is. I
love this series, and I'm excited to see it continuing. And I think the Forerunner looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more excited for the pilot, though. That one I am stoked for.
Uh-huh. It's not actually in the list here, but we'll love to.
I'm sure we'll cover that one next time around.
It'll probably come out.
It was a little late for this episode, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a little late.
Eric, the Forerunner is.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to the Nerf Rival Covenant and the Nerf Rival UNSC. And the Nerf Rival, what's another Halo thing? The thing about it being called the Forerunner is so weird. It actually does kind of look like Forerunner weapons from Halo 4 and on. just in the way that it's kind of blocky. Anyway.
KT showing the nerd. Well, just by the Halo nerd.
Okay. Our last Nerf brand topic is the Gelfire Legion, but I kind of want to talk more about Gelfire in general and how we sort of plan on handling it on this podcast.
This could be a while.
Well, we had talked. I mean, we had talked about, like, you know, this is a Nerf product, and so we're probably at least going to mention it and the fact that it exists because some people are into this hobby because they came up on Nerf and they're into Nerf. And some people are not interested in the gel blasters at all because it's a completely different toy, in my opinion. Yeah. It's just like so far off of the thing that we do as foam flingers.
I think it's very strange. I know where it is because obviously Nerf isn't the only one, you know, Dart Zone getting in. Everybody was trying to jump on the gel ball or gel blaster, you know, kind of bandwagon. Because they were doing very well, you know. They're full auto. They're extremely fast, you know, stuff. Right. The round, and obviously for how fast you could go through the rounds, that's what they're really going to be making their money on is selling more and more of the gel balls.
Yep.
But we are seeing, unfortunately, some of the things that happened, like you know, in New York where they banned them gel blasters.
Yeah, New York City, you can't. You will have it.
Yeah. Yeah, New York will be confiscated. You know, some countries like say Australia, gel ball is considered. You need more licensing. Actually, Bradley Phillips
is the person to check out.
Yeah, if you ever really want to look into the what goes on in Australia, check out Bradley Phillips's YouTube channel. But you know, they require more licensing to get a gel ball blaster than it is to get a real steel firearm. A firearm requires less licensing and less like red tape than a gel blaster, which was crazy. But I'm very surprised to see a company this big not noticing that both China, Australia have basically either outlawed or banned or made them very difficult. States or you know, certain counties or cities are starting to ban them, like what happened in New York. If you're not familiar with the New York one as well, I would suggest checking it out. It was a very sad story, unfortunately, that kind of went into that. I don't really want to go too far into it. But
really unfortunate it was, because people are abusing these gel blasters, essentially. And that's why.
Yeah, they can get abused very easily. And there's no short supply of them. Gel blasters are very easily accessible. You can get them on numerous websites. They're on most big box store shelves, and they come in you know, basically they look like your AR-15 or AK-47. They have them looking now. They do try to make some of them more blocky, but let's be honest, somebody who gets this throws a rattle can of black paint, which is the most ridiculous idea, and these things are very intimidating, and they can be.
I will counter, not all of them are like really blocky or firearm shaped.
Oh no.
A lot of ones I see, especially on like Amazon or whatever, or even on like Target shelves, the ones that you see are the same design as like the Gelfire Mythic, where it's basically a weird thing with a giant like jug on the top, which I mean,
Yes, but I'll tell you, I've been contacted. I have never made On Family Foam Sport, I have never made a gel ball video. I own a Gelfire Mythic, and I have not yet made a video on it, and I don't really know what to say about it, and so I just haven't done it yet. I have been contacted by more gel ball blaster companies, and each one pretty clearly is one person for whom English is not their first language, selling a product that they just have in bulk that they've bought somewhere. And most of them look the same. It is hard to tell them all apart. And there's just so many offers to send product and do these videos. And I've started directly communicating them and just turning them down. Because it's like, what am I going to do? Like, I am not going to become a gel ball channel.
And I have a feeling that might have happened from the China ban on it, to be honest.
Yeah, because they're trying to get rid of the product. They can't sell it in China.
Yeah, they have to push the product because they've already made however many, and they're just sitting in warehouses and they can't sell it to in their own country, but they can sell it out of their country. So obviously trying to push these products as hard as they can.
Yeah.
You know, which is unfortunate.
I got offers too, and I turned them down by ignoring them because
yeah, that works.
I mean, I wouldn't mind a Gelfire Mythic, but anything other than that, like, I have no interest in Gel Ball.
Yeah,
not my thing.
The thing that I really wanted to do was the first company that contacted me, I attempted to get them to send me a blaster. This thing keeps happening where people are sending stuff to my PO box, and like, they, for some reason, shipping to my PO box costs like $200, and so they can't do that, and so I have to give them a different address. And I went through all these hoops, and they shipped it supposedly, and it has disappeared, and I haven't heard from them in ages, and I don't care that much. But what I did want to do is I wanted to do a biodegrading test with the gel balls and actually take the Nerf gel balls versus some generic gel balls versus like Dart Zone gel balls and put a bunch of them, like soak a bunch of them, get them like you would fire them, and take both whole ones and popped ones and put them in soil, put them in water, put them out on a paper towel and see how they look after a week, a month, a couple months.
I will say this. I've actually had a little bit of experience with this. I had some of the larger ones. They came with like a little wooden catapult, and they inflate the same way. It's the same stuff, just a little bit larger. I fired some of them before like Hyper was announced. This was just after I'd gotten the Rush 40 and I wanted to see if the gel balls would fit, and they did.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I shot them outside in like in my driveway. Every time it rained for the next like 2 or 3 months, they would reinflate and you would have bits of shattered gel ball everywhere.
What?
They come back.
Yeah, they're like sponges.
See, this is what I was afraid of, right?
Yeah.
This is what I was afraid of, that they make these claims that they biodegrade. All they mean is once they pop, you probably can't find them again.
Yeah,
that's
like
not
microplastic,
the same.
Sort
that's
of.
Not the same.
It's, yeah,
like it may not be as bad.
Back in your driveway.
It may not be as bad as a legit microplastic, but that doesn't make it good.
Yeah.
And like a dart, you know, I still find, you know, the snow melts, and I still find darts from last season, but I find them and I can pick them up and I can throw them away because
good luck doing that with a shattered gel ball.
Exactly. Yeah. So. That's my feeling on gel balls, and that's my feeling on that and the other central difference that I think exists. And the Gelfire Legion is interesting in this regard because it's a Springer, which is weird.
It doesn't have a place. I'll just say that right now.
That's the thing that's really strange to me, because one of the things I don't like about gel ball is the lack of variety in the blasters. Everything is full auto, and like, you know, every now and then you get something that's select fire, but it's always like, who's going to use that when you have effectively infinite ammunition?
They hit the same performance. They have the same capacity. You're basically just limiting your rate of fire.
I would say exactly. It's even worse. Bradley Phillips, I've been following a lot of times when he does some of the gel ball ones, and he looked at the Mythic and actually said, I don't understand what the point of this is.
I saw
and
that video.
He pointed out some issues with the Nerf branded version, saying that it's FPS is much lower and it has feeding problems because the mechanism, because they obviously can't have the same hopper design, is actually, it's a narrower neck on it. So the rounds, like the gel balls, do not actually feed into the blaster.
Yeah.
So you can go out there and if you are interested, you can buy cheaper and better performing ones than what even Hasbro is producing. And what is their audience?
And yet it's hard to do that because the market is so flooded and it's really hard to tell. They all look like AKs. It's really hard to tell them apart. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wild. My point though is more to the fact that because like one of the things that I think makes Nerf really special in comparison to Airsoft and in comparison to paintball and in comparison to gel ball is that we have a variety of firing mechanisms. We have a variety of ammunition types that mm-hmm. can be assigned different roles and do different things that behave in different ways.
Yeah.
When you're all full auto all the time, the play style is very limited. And that, I think that is at that and the ammo thing are the things that are sort of make me uninterested on a core level with gel blasters. It doesn't sound like fun.
I think too, like part of what I enjoy about this hobby is the innovation that we all have. We're always doing something interesting. And with gel ball, I'm looking at it and everything that basically you'd need for a good gel blaster, quote unquote good, have already been done.
It's just there.
There's nothing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, where are you going to innovate?
Yeah.
Even the, like, play styles are very, you know, with Nerf, while there can be competitive aspects to it, the one thing I like is that there can also just be ridiculously fun and not competitive. And when you I used to play paintball, and I have friends who played airsoft very competitively. And the thing is that a lot of times those environments can be very toxic. And the one thing that's very nice about Nerf and any type of like speed dart or anything like that is that the communities are actually not that toxic. It's compared to what I've seen, it is nowhere near that level. Mm-hmm. It's much more fun. It's much more enjoyable. It can be enjoyed by quite a large demographic, no matter, you know, who you are, where you are, what disability you may have. It doesn't really matter.
Yep.
And that's it's more of the thing I like about it is that we can innovate, or we can just literally get something off the shelf and just have fun. And that is something that I would say is very attractive about this, is that it's just something where a lot of people can just go and have fun.
There is a functional mechanical difference between what we do and what those other sports do that opens up a lot of those areas of innovation and accessibility and all these other things. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
We want to quickly cycle back to the actual like blaster itself.
No, I don't. No,
there's nothing to really talk about.
it has a crappy priming system, and otherwise it looks cool. There, boom, blaster
Sweet.
Covered.
Done. Okay.
Oh, and it has slam fire.
Oh.
I don't know how that's going to work with that priming mechanism. I'm just going to put, I said that in my thing. Like, I don't understand
how
the
do you,
point of
how
the
do you slam fire from a hopper?
I watched Barrett's review this morning. It doesn't work very well.
All right, there you go.
I had a feeling. I didn't get a chance to watch it.
Okay. Next thing up is something a little unusual that I really want to try that I'm excited about. I
want to play a game.
This is a game that I am borrowing and modifying from another podcast that I listen to, a Pokemon TCG podcast called Uncommon Energy. Which, if you're into Pokemon TCG, highly recommend that podcast with Trainer Chip Ritchie and Azul GG. And they play a game they call Guess That Pokemon. And what they do is Pokemon cards have a little bit of flavor text on the bottom of the card that says a little funny thing about the Pokemon. And what they'll do is each week one of them will pick a card and read just the flavor text. And they'll remove, if the name of the Pokemon is in there, they'll remove the name. And the other player has to guess the Pokemon, and they will earn points and they keep track of the points, and it doesn't mean anything, but like they've been tied at like 2 points or something for most of the show. And at one point a guest came on and they played, and they tied in one guess the hosts. Anyway, it's really, really fun. And I wanted to come up with a similar version of that for Nerf. And so I've come up with What's That Blaster. And we're going to do something very similar, but what I'm going to be doing, and I'll go first this week, and then I'm going to make y'all do it later, and we'll trade off. And I'm going to read the official blurb for a blaster, and I will. We can discuss this later. We'll probably stick with Nerf brand ones because the language is kind of consistent between them. Because like if I read a Busby blurb, it might be kind of obvious that it's a Busby blurb, for example. But we can talk about that later. I'll read the blurb, and the two of you can discuss together and figure out what you think the blaster is. If you are sure, if you're totally sure about it, you can lock in your answer and earn 4 points each.
Okay.
If you are not sure, there are 3 lifelines you can ask for, and for each lifeline that you use, you lose 1 point. So if you take 1 lifeline and then you guess and you get it right, you get 3 points, etc. And the 3 lifelines are the original stock capacity of the blaster, which is either how many rounds it can hold internally or on a cylinder, or the magazine that it, the size of the magazine that it originally came with. Usually that's part of the name, the code name of the blaster.
Right.
Another lifeline is the release year. I'll tell you what the release year of the blaster was. And the other lifeline is the original retail price. And obviously you can't look anything up. You have to go from memory. You have to go from just what you know.
Oh boy.
If the name of the blaster is usually in the thing, I'm going to remove the name of the blaster and the name of the ammunition that it uses. Because those two things, I think, would... Obviously, the name would be the answer. The ammo, I think, narrows it down a little bit too much. We may tweak this game as time goes on. But I also want to encourage everybody listening at home to play along and let us know... if you get it, and if you beat the hosts that are guessing this week, and what your score is as time goes on. I think this would be a good time. Are you guys ready?
Let's go.
I don't see why not.
All right. So here we go. Are you ready to double your blasting for your next mission? The blank blaster lets you send two blank hurtling towards your target at the same time with every shot. Firing this fast is no problem because the blaster's built-in drop-down clip snaps open for fast, easy reloading. The blaster's tactical rail is compatible with any tactical rail accessory sold separately, so you can upgrade at will for even more strategic advantage. The blaster's revolutionary blank tech hurls the bright orange blank an ultra-long distance. Blast your target with double firepower to outfire your opponent.
Oh, God.
I already know what this one is.
Do you know what this is?
I'm fairly confident.
Okay. Until you say names of blasters back and forth, until you say that you're locking it in.
The drop-down magazine gives it away. This has to be the Diatron.
Is it the Diatron?
I believe so, because that is two shots.
Yeah, you're right. Magazine.
That's got to be the Diatron. Just saying.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Are you guys locking that answer in?
I'm gonna lock it in.
I'm gonna lock in the Diatron.
You too, Jolt?
Yep.
All right. You are correct. It is the Diatron.
Oh my god. I was like, oh my god, which would fire two shots?
You were talking
on?
About the double. Well, because there's the double dealer, and there's the warden, the warden and the rough cut.
Rough cut. What you said. Well, the problem with it is that, so you said internal clip, and I heard clip, and I was like, oh, the only thing that, because they, remember, Nerf calls the mags clips.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, the only thing that had clips was double dealer. What else had it?
Jolt's right, the drop down clip, that is a concept that's only going to exist in Vortex.
Vortex line.
I think so, actually.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
Diatron, and the it's Vigilon a horrible loading system.
Yeah, the Vigilon also has a drop down clip.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Heaven forbid you try and reload before you empty your capacity.
Yeah, not happening.
Okay. So I'm gonna start a score sheet. So you both start out with 4 points. We may have to adjust the game to make it harder as time goes on. But the lifelines, of course, stock capacity of 10, which is 5 shots.
10 plus 2.
Well, +2, but that's not the advertised stock capacity.
Advertised.
Whatever. If I tell you 10 plus 2, that makes it easier. Release year was 2013, and the original retail price was $19.99. So I'll mark that down as both of y'all getting it. If you also got it at home before they said it, let us know. sweet. I think that's great. Okay, so now next in 2 weeks, I'm going to make one of you pick, and then the other two of us will guess. We'll cycle around and do this. Yep. Okay, cool. So that was nice and quick. I was afraid of that. I'm glad I picked an easy one for the first time, although it would have been nice if we had to use some lifelines, but...
We're talking about the Eternals Master here that you had on this.
I know.
This
side. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's pretty hard.
It's going to be hard for us when he starts picking blasters.
That's
because...
very true.
I'll take the vaguest motherfucking blaster you've ever heard of.
I'm sure you will.
I bet.
Moving on into third party news. We have the Speed Dart International Championships.
Yeah.
And Vile, you covered this. Would you talk about this?
So Speed Dart International does, it's essentially a championship. These are kind of the, what's the best way you would describe it? It's essentially like, so I used to play a lot of this down when I was in the San Diego area. And it is a competitive. I'm actually trying to find the website because they didn't really give a whole lot. They do have it on their website, like, oh, you know, international or Speed Dart International Championship 2023. It doesn't really have anything else. I didn't really see anything for upcoming events because they were showing like May and of 2022 and they didn't really show anything else. So I don't really have much to go off of, unfortunately, right now.
Right.
But Speed Dart is essentially, if you're not familiar with it, it's a very big one internationally as well. So there's a lot of, it is a very fast gameplay style. Usually they have a lot of those inflatable barriers and you know, things in the way, like a cover that you can get behind and stuff like that. It's usually very, very competitive. Like I said, very, very fast playing styles. Actually, even on their own website, they have like full face masks. I see this a lot in places like Malaysia or Singapore, where they do a lot of this type of stuff, actually. And they'll even use, like, even on their website, they're showing Worker Gen 2. They have chest rigs and battle belts and scar barrels and all of that. Like, they really go pretty heavy into it. And they actually run clinics and stuff like that as well, skirmishes and stuff. It's sort of like, I would say it's the competitive level that you would see in Airsoft or Paintball. Like, it's very, very similar. Actually, it's very similar to, like, what Dart Zone did. But Speed Dart International is a very international type of thing. It's run in a lot of different countries and stuff like that. Like I said, Singapore is one of them. Like I said, I don't know anything else. They really have no other information as of right now, other than the date, which was the 3rd and the 4th of June, and that it was going to be in Clifton, New Jersey. They have it all on their website, which speeddartinternational.com was their website. To keep an eye out on.
Okay, but the long and the short of it is Speed Dart is a relatively specific game style.
Yeah, it's
regardless,
very
it's
fast.
It's just interesting to see that there's another major tournament coming about. But we just don't know that much yet.
Yeah, we just don't know a whole lot. The information kind of dropped. It was originally dropped on Reddit, and then obviously, you could go to their website and check it out, but there's really, and I tried rooting around to see if I could find something. There's really nothing else, at least that I could find as of right now.
All right. Well, hopefully we will find out more soon, because I do like the idea of having, like, there was a lot of potential with the concept of, like, you know, the Dart Zone, the, you know, a major brand taking on the a Nerf competitive event. And having another one out and about, so there is more options, more different places to take, and more reasons to form a team. Because you theoretically, even if the game style is slightly different, you can train a team to go to these different game styles and use the same skills. And so I think that encourages people to start teams, right?
Yes.
And do that kind of work.
And where I was, like I said, when I was down in the Southern California area, that's where one of the main competitors from the Dart Zone tournament actually was one of the top ranking teams. And I knew a lot of the people from that. I played with a lot of the people actually from that. It's really fun. It's a very, very fast. Games are usually very short. They're 5 minutes usually at their longest.
Yeah.
Like, they are very, very quick. It's fast paced, but it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
I would say if you haven't taken a look at it or you don't know anything, absolutely go give it a check.
Sweet.
On their website.
And then in other third-party news and getting back into blasters for a second, we have the Busby Spin Shot. Now, how did this come about? Someone got one, right? Because I haven't seen
Dorian.
These.
Dorian, yeah.
He found it at a Walmart.
Okay, at a Walmart.
He actually
because it's an adventure. It's an Adventure Force blaster, right?
Yeah, it's Adventure Force blaster, but on the actual shell, it does say it's made
Busby,
by Busby.
For sure. Yeah,
it's very strange. If you. Like I said in the actual episode, if you've ever seen like the old Bionicle Rotuka spinners, they have similar toys now where you're supposed to launch it in the air and catch it.
It made me so happy when you had an original Bionicle spinner to show in that video.
Any excuse to flex Bionicles.
That just made my day. Absolutely made my day.
I looked at it, I was like, of course Jolt pulled out Bionicle.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, I wish I never got those types of spinners, actually, with the Bionicle that I've got. So I could have never showed it off. I'm glad you got that one.
I launched one of those Ninjago ones on the roof of the Lego store that I used to hang out at in back in California.
Oh, yeah, those things. I have a couple of those as well.
Those things could launch. And if it was windy, there was like a little bit of an updraft, and that thing was literally gone. Never saw it again.
Right?
So what I'm hearing about the ammo type that comes with this is it's something we haven't seen before. As you were saying, it's this sort of three finned little rotor.
It's like a propeller blade, like a helicopter.
And it shoots forward out of the barrel with just like a spinning mechanism. And it reminds me in some ways of if you've ever seen a Zing Ring. So Zing Rings, they're actually quite large and they're sold as more of a sporting good. But I have one and we actually have them listed. The games that I've been playing down near Boston, we actually have them listed as an option of a piece of ammo that you can launch for Defend the Core. And it's worth a ton of points because the thing is ridiculous to try to get anywhere. But it's a gigantic, it's just a ring. But the way the launcher works is you pull back and twist on this elastic thing. I'm doing the motion as if people can see me. Nobody can see me. You pull back and you twist. And when you release, it just pushes it forward and spins it. And then it floats. And this seems very similar to that, just much smaller. But my understanding is that it's essentially just plastic. It's not foam.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, yeah. They are. Dorian confirmed this, and this was my main concern about this ammo type, is that they are made of solid plastic. Now, what Dorian says is that they move extremely slowly, and
right.
I can believe that. They spend most of their energy spinning rather than moving forward.
Right. So they're more floaters, kind of like Vortex.
Yeah, that's why they claim
but even slower.
Such impressive ranges, but still, it's a little... I'd like to get one in hand to kind of try and see how much they really hurt. Dorian said that they don't really hurt, like, at all.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where still plastic can be a bit concerning.
I'm a big fan of weird ammo type, so I'm excited to get my hands on this one. But it's whenever something like this comes out, it's another thing that it's like if you organize games, you have to get one and you have to experiment with it and decide what your rulings are going to be on it. Because I have to look at, like, are we going to allow this on our field? Are we going to... is it going to have a normal point value in games that have different values for different ammo types, or is it going to be a special thing? All these different questions have to come up and we have to figure them out, which is fine. Again, this is one of the things I love about this hobby. But it's also like you see an Adventure Force branded product. Something we didn't ask Dorian that I'd like to know is, was it on the Nerf shelf or was it in a different part of the toy X section? Because
that's
Adventure
a really good point.
Adventure Force is not just a blaster brand, even when it's done under Busby and Dart Zone stuff or over Busby and Dart Zone stuff. They brand all kinds of stuff Adventure Force. Is it intended to be more of like a target shooting toy?
Yeah, there's a lot to question on that. I'm also curious on the ammo. Because Dorian's thing about how slow it was, I'm curious what it could be used for in game types. But I'm also worried about did Dorian notice anything for like... Actually, I do know that Dorian said that he just found it on a shelf, but I'm curious if there's any extra ammo that we could even get a hold of.
Also
like, can
true.
You get the ammo by itself?
Also true. It does seem like something that could be 3D printed, potentially.
Yeah, probably.
I just heard back from Dorian. Yes, it was, in fact, in the Nerf aisle.
Well, there you go.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Nice, quick response. Thank you, Dorian. So, yep, that's a weird one. That will float for a minute. Like I said, I look forward to getting my hands on one and doing a review and experimenting with the ammo. There's always the danger with something like this that someone does figure out how to shoot it really hard. But generally speaking, with these ammo types, there tend to be a limit on the velocity that they can handle, and they just start to flop out of the sky when you shoot them too hard. And so fingers crossed that is the situation here.
I think more likely the issue would be you're spinning that little central shaft so fast that you're going to have to basically machine your own gears. You can't print something that's going to withstand.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Just getting it to... Well. So again, though, somebody could build a motorized...
I think you're going to fall into the same line of Vortex, where if you start to go too fast, you basically put so much spin on it that it just shoots in a random direction.
Right.
Like, if it's rotating clockwise, it's just going to basically, instead of shooting in a straight line, you're basically going to hit the wall to your right or wherever, you know, right. Whatever
you know,
direction
when
spinning.
When you said that for a second, I wasn't sure whether you were talking about Nerf Vortex or Koosh Vortex, and I realized it doesn't matter. It applies to both. It doesn't make a difference.
But yeah, that's my only other thing is I think it is going to be limited that just with the design of this type of little ammo thing, you're really not going to be able to push it very hard.
Yep.
The other thing is where are you going to get refills? Because are they even going to make refills?
Right.
That's what my question was earlier. Is it even available?
And we've seen so many old ammo types that are now extremely rare, like the Zing Ring, which you can only get a Zing Ring with a Zing Ring launcher, and the Titan Rocket is the obvious example, right?
Yeah.
Like you buy a Titan Rocket, if you actually contacted them, they would give you a mail order form, and you could order extras of those.
Yeah, but how many people did that? So that's the question,
probably
right?
Like three.
because they don't make them anymore, and so it doesn't. Even if they offered them in sort of a weird way, if nobody got them, it doesn't matter. Right, because like somewhere they eventually threw away a box of Titan Rockets. I guarantee you, because not enough people knew you could call in, get the order form mailed to you, presumably at that time, and then fill it out on paper with a check or money order, which you had to get from your parents, and then send it back to them
just for a Titan Rocket,
and then get the Titan Rocket. And by the time you get the Titan Rocket, you probably broke your Titan.
Yeah.
So like how many people actually, you know what I mean? So like realistically there are definitely less Titan Rockets in the world than Titans. Maybe not than functional Titans, but definitely less Titan Rockets in the world than Titans. Anyway, this may be another ammo type like that disappears off the face of the earth, but it's interesting to see a new one anytime it comes up. Last third party news item, Dart Zone dropped a merch line, a set of t-shirts. They advertised it very heavily as a merch line. It is definitely seven black t-shirts with rectangular prints on them.
No bullshit marketing.
Yeah. I know. All I could think of is like, did they just go with like Teespring or TeePublic as their?
That's what it feels like. They're all within, you know, like when you print on a t-shirt, there's a space that you're allowed to print in, and if you print outside of that space you have to like do custom planning and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. and those are the coolest t-shirts, unless you have just like a really cool design that looks really good solidly on its own. The designs of all of the current shirts, they literally have this, most of them except for the Dart Zone logo one, they have this grid behind them that is a literal rectangle, and to me that makes the designs feel cheaper because it's clear that it's just printed within that box.
Yeah, and it was like a template that they just threw a bunch of stuff on top of.
Right.
Yeah. I'm looking at them right now.
And I get they're trying to push their Dart. The art is cute. I like the representations of all the little Dart names. Of course, those of us who were around for the contest where they were trying to name them.
Yeah.
Cringe.
You know, Chili got picked over Watermelon. I don't know how I feel about this bamboo one with like a ramen bowl.
I don't know.
That's what?
Well, look at the bamboo one.
Bamboo shoots are like a thing that goes in that kind of food sometimes. And they
Wait,
have
people
like,
eat bamboo?
Yeah.
There are many kinds of bamboo, my friend.
Yeah.
Today I learned.
It's in a lot of Asian dishes, and it's very delicious, I would say.
Yeah,
I love it.
I mean, of course it'll be in Asian dishes. That's where it grows.
I mean, don't go into the panda enclosure at the zoo and try to eat that bamboo.
That's not the same bamboo.
That's not what we're going for. Anyway.
Not what we're eating.
So, you know, the designs are cute. I like the little treasure chest full of ruby darts, but the overall, the way the shirts look, honestly, I would have preferred if it was the art. So like you have, here's the waffle one, right? And it's the darts and they're on waffles. I would have preferred a shirt that was just the waffles with the darts on them, no background, no text, as big as possible on the front of the shirt, and the Dart Zone logo on the shoulder, because that is, if you wear that out in public, people are just like, what is going on there? That's a conversation starter, and that's just like a cool, like weird design.
I don't understand this, because wasn't it, Jolt, you might be able to answer this for me, but I remember Walcom has one, and it looks like an Eggo waffle
Oh, yeah.
And it has the waffles, and it was the tip of the waffle darts, and they were pouring syrup over the top of that. And what I kind of hate about this entire line is it's like Dart Zone took all of the names that we, the community, gave, marketing all of it, and even stealing some of the design elements to make their own shirt line. I kind of have a problem with that because other people have already created this. These are names that were designed either we had started doing before they even asked us to make up names. We had already started naming these darts ourselves, and now they're just trying to capitalize on it. They're trying to basically, you know, make money off of the stuff that we've already done.
They had this competition and they figured that giving a free blaster to the person whose thing they picked was compensation for the name.
Right. And I find that I don't know. I feel very uncomfortable seeing them do that. In all honesty, like, I can understand, and it's not like I don't have Dart Zone blasters, right? Like, I really love my Nexus. I got a completely built up Nexus, and
I have really good feelings about the products that the company actually puts out.
Yeah.
But seeing this is very hard.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of
some of these are also like looking at, then on top you have the number one darts period tee.
Right. Yeah.
Where we're just going to go back to no bullshit marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is it's frustrating because there are a lot of other darts out there, and Worker has done a very good job with their more recent ones.
Worker Gen 3 Plus are the best. Just period.
The Worker stuff is fantastic now. Their quality has just leaps and bounds over what it used to be 5 years ago or four years ago, or however long it was when they first started making their own. But
Ed Blue, what's that?
Yeah. But like, or Stefan's back in the old days, what I mean? Like when people were making their own. But yeah, I do get kind of frustrated seeing a way for, because when Dart Zone first came out, and especially with the release of the Nexus Pro, that I would say was the big, like, they're paying attention. They're taking us seriously. Right. And they were building up pretty big. You know, the Aeon came out and all these other blasters, and they did really good. And then we had the unfortunate, competition that seemed to have some questionable things that happened. And it kind of opened up some wounds of like, well, hang on a second. And, then some of the more recent blasters that have come out, even some that were used in that competition had problems that they weren't trying to talk about. And that started to really, like, I would say it started to sour the relationship between the company and the community. And seeing something like this is just like reopening old wounds almost to me. It's hard to see because I really had, I think at the beginning, I had a lot of strong feelings like this is great seeing a company really, take notice of those of us who are in the community and kind of the things that we're looking for and the options that we can have. And then kind of just, turn around on us like that is what it feels like. It's kind of a odd feeling.
One of the things that really struck me at the Dart Zone Pro, was it called Dart Zone Pro Tour? Yeah. I was like trying to remember the name of it, just like I was trying to remember the name of our new show. one of the things that really struck me was a video of a player prepping their Mark III for competition, the one that they had to pick up off the table to play, and immediately taking the scope off because they didn't want the scope. And they were told that they had to leave the scope on. And there was a conversation back and forth between the person at the table and someone off screen. And eventually it was confirmed they weren't allowed, because what they initially were like, okay, I have to leave the scope on. I'm going to put it on this rail on the bottom so it's out of my way. Mm-hmm. And they were told, no, you have to put the scope on the top. And what that tells me is the marketing department is in charge.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yep.
They want the blaster to look a certain way in the photo and the video that they get out of the tournament. And I get that. And that's the danger of working with a large company like that on that level at any time that happens. But if you are creating a product that you are marketing for pro level players and you're not willing to let them use the equipment the way they see fit, it turned a corner, like you said, where they were initially listening to us. Now they're trying to tell us.
Yeah.
That don't go over so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really, it's a very it really different, doesn't.
very different relationship. So
yeah,
and the Dispute Pro Tour was born.
Yeah,
yeah.
Now, if they put that on a shirt, oh, that would have been nice.
It would be nice to see, because like that's a thing that Hasbro, I could see them doing that. I could see them like being willing to make fun of what has happened with them and like make fun of the growing pains of like trying to connect these things, and that would make
them do that
more. Did they actually make that? Because I feel like they used the logo somewhere
on Instagram and then chickened out.
Okay, it was an Instagram post.
Yeah, they did post it on Instagram for a second and then they pulled it.
Yeah.
I think some intern probably did that and thought it was funny. And then corporate was like, dude,
no, maybe. It looks bad.
I mean, Primetime Toys is not that big of a company. Like, compared to a Nerf, let alone a Hasbro, they are very small.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, we saw their Discord server, and that was an interesting experience, what happened on their Discord server. I don't know how much we want to get into that right now, but that seemed like an attempt to like open up to the community a little bit, and it was very short-lived, and they passed it off to someone else to run for them.
Yeah.
And it was clear that they just sort of didn't know how to handle, it felt like, I should say, they didn't really know how to handle and filter like the chaos of a community, a very mixed community of hobbyists who are passionate about their product and about their work, but just like not in a way that fit their image of what it was. And I wonder if they came into it expecting it to be another social media platform where they can push their message out, but instead they realized that it was a way for people to talk back to them, and they didn't want that.
Yeah.
That's my feeling about what happened there. But So I'm not buying any of Dart Zone's t-shirts. I would not tell anybody else they shouldn't if they like them. But it is not the kind of t-shirt that gets me excited to buy it.
Yeah. Not interested. Not that's a pass for me.
Yep. Okay, moving on, because we are going long. I expected our first episode to go pretty long, but I'm really excited to get to a couple community topics. And the first one we have on here is the TCS2, which is a licensed Talonclaw variant. And I don't know a ton about this. Do either of you know? Because Grimm's covered this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, from the videos like that we saw on there, I like the design personally.
It's pretty.
I like this it's almost like a more chunky, I guess, Talonclaw. It looks, obviously the priming mechanism looks to be much better. It's actually surprisingly a lot like the Tryon, obviously, that Jolt was talking about in the news as well.
Yeah.
So it has rollers on that. It's just a little bit like the handle looks like it's a little bit of a better design, like the grip. You know, stock attachment points. Because the Talonclaw was made to be a much, you know, smaller variant essentially of the Caliburn.
Right.
So a lot of people, especially competitive players, were using Talonclaws pretty regularly. And it looks like this is just a much more refined Talonclaw is what I would say.
Actually, speaking of the Tryon, were we actually going to cover that, or are we just skipping over that?
No, we are supposed to cover that, and it just isn't on the list for some reason. Why don't we move on to why don't we just move on to that? Because the Tryon
right back
is
over to a different topic.
That's fine. Because I don't have a lot to, like the TCS2 looks cool. I don't have a lot to say about it. I like the Talonclaw. Yeah. I'd probably like it too. There's a lot of versions of the Talonclaw.
Yeah, there's a ton.
And so it's hard to tell at this point like what is really different about this one. So yeah, why don't you tell us about the Tryon, Jolt, because you have one in hand.
Yes, I do. And
maybe you literally have it in hand right now, because
ran out of the room and grabbed my Tryon.
I might literally have a box sitting right next to me, by the way.
Am I the only one that doesn't have a Tryon? Why am I the only one that doesn't have a Tryon?
I won't keep this Tryon. This Tryon is not going to stay with me, but that's for another day.
All right. All right, hit us.
So the Game Face Tryon, it is fantastic. I am completely blown away. So imagine a Nexus Pro, but but you take all the issues it had, throw them out the door, and add features. So it's like, it primes in the same way. It's got that top bar, but they added rollers to the actual, like, pump sled. So it's a lot smoother, because one of the issues with the Nexus is it's kind of iffy
there.
It's a little... It definitely drags.
Yeah, it's a block that drags on plastic.
Well, that makes it hard to increase the strength on it. That's the thing that I've encountered. Absolutely. Is you put a heavier spring in it, and that mechanism starts to complain.
Yep.
Absolutely. And also, the priming slop is gone because this doesn't chamber full-length darts at all. So there's none of that. That was another huge complaint a lot of people seem to have with the Nexus.
Yeah.
Another big thing is, if you played with a Nexus, you'll know it creaks. The shell quality... it works, but it isn't the best. That is not so with the Trion. They made this very thick, like, dummy-thick plastic. It is very nice in hand.
How is the weight compared to a Nexus?
I don't know. I haven't compared it, but it's not, like, super heavy or anything, but it's not, like, it feels high quality.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like it's lighter than it should be.
Totally. I mean, I will take extra weight for a blast, especially, you know, it depends on the play condition. Like, if I'm going to an HVZ, I may want the lightest blaster I can carry, potentially. But, like, generally speaking, I'll take weight if it means increased quality. Like, if that's what it takes to make a more solid product, fine.
Now, I've had discussions with Jolt on the side, by the way. So, remember I said earlier, I have a completely modded Nexus. It has both worker metal kits and top rail and all of that. And it's essentially like that, but at a much cheaper cost, by the way, because this out the door, what was it, Jolts? It's $79.99?
It's $80. And for what you're getting, it's an absolute steal. Because you get basically the only thing this doesn't have that it needs is a scar barrel. That's it. Otherwise, this thing is good to go.
Wild.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
So much.
I was going to say a fully modded Nexus Pro like what I've got is the $50 for the blaster when it was new, and basically the two worker kits are almost $50 each. You're almost $150 in on the blaster as it is at that point, and this is basically half that cost. Yeah, and that's just without even the scar on it,
right?
And you know what I mean? Like this is absolutely. And even looking at it, like, this is 100% essentially a fully decked out Nexus from the start, like from the beginning. There's no, and it, like I said, it, at almost half the cost.
And even then you get more with it because it has features the Nexus doesn't have, like the pump rollers and slam fire. And it even has a skinny breech out of the box.
Including features you can't really mod into the Nexus.
Right. Yeah, you cannot put slam fire in a Nexus. This blaster is fascinating inside. It does not work like a Nexus at all.
Another interesting thing, and Jolt, is this correct? I'm looking at the grip on the Trion. Is that a standard, like, AR-style grip that can be swapped out?
From what
out?
I understand, it is like a firearm grip. Yes, so you can put, like, your airsoft grip on there, and it has a proper stock under there.
So that, and I've seen people already swap out the rear section, so it has like a thumb hole stock. I've already seen people underneath that, you can literally take it off and it's a buffer tube. So you can put a buffer tube stock on it. It has a lot of options available to it. The same thing with the front pump grip. If you don't like the angled foregrip that it's got, it's got pick rail under that. So it's
impressive.
Yeah, it's got quite a lot.
That's like impressive. So, like, you know how the Nexus had like the quick change spring cap. Well, the Trion takes that to another level by just giving you the spring spacers.
Wow. Yep.
Spring spacers are included.
All right. So I'm probably going to order one now. But you sold me. You sold me, young man. Here's the question. Is the game face, first of all, game face that, well, they've put out like one other blaster, right?
Yeah, they retooled basically a Sita blaster,
right?
That was the, what was that thing called, the game face prime? It was
prime,
not really
right.
A very
it
good
was
blaster.
It was kind of fine, right? Well, so
it wiggled in the middle. It was
I remember that. Yeah, well, it seems like they learned a lot from that, right? So here's the question. At $80, is this going, so like the Nexus is being discontinued, it's slowly disappearing from stores, there's kind of like, right, a dwindle of last product. My Walmart still has them at like full price. They refuse to discount them for some reason, not that I need more, but do you think that this blaster is actually going to, at this price point, take the hobby by storm? Is it going to replace the functionality of the Nexus in the market, where it was sort of the go-to standard blaster for such a long time?
For the competitive people, especially, I would say yes, because it is absolutely up to 200 FPS with those spring spacers in it. Like, it can be tuned. Obviously, they give you the spring spacers, so it allows you to tune for the game that you're playing.
Right.
And from what I understand, Jolt, you're the only, since you've actually got it in hand, mine's still in the box. Would a Nexus spring fit in there?
I actually tried this. It does and doesn't. It's slightly too short, and I think slightly too wide.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, but here's the real
slightly different.
The real meat of my question is less about the serious, because for a serious competitive person, there you're looking at buying this, or your next step is spending well over $100 to $200 to more dollars on a bespoke blaster of some kind, right?
Right.
Because before that, the option was, do I buy a Nexus Pro and put a bunch of time and money into modding it, or do I skip it and go straight to building a Talonclaw or a Caliburn or whatever? So the question is, does the Tryon for those people clearly works, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's something that'll work. At the very least, I can see everybody owning one as a backup, you know, because it's like, it's a functional backup for any high performing blaster of that type. My real question is, does the Tryon replace the Nexus for the casual person who's interested in getting competitive but not ready to dump a bunch of money? Is that $30 difference going to be too much for the casual person, or are they going to see the extra value
in this kind of product? I want to say something here. Since the Nexus is mostly off the market, the closest analog to the Tryon is now actually the Max Striker, which retails for $60. Mm, that's right. Only really a $20 difference. I would say absolutely. That extra $20 gets you so much more potential.
Yeah, I would say, and I think it's going to be difficult though for them. And this is going to be, Striker is big box store. You can walk in, you can grab one off the shelf and buy it. That was the same thing about Nexus. That was what was really kind of enticing about it. Same thing with the darts, right? The first time half darts were being available in a big box store. Game Face, yeah, it was huge. But the Game Face isn't really offered in a big box. So if you haven't heard of it, I think it's going to have the unfortunate thing of flying under the radar unless somebody gets into the hobby and already knows about it and has heard about it.
Right.
If they don't have that ability to know or hear, they're probably just going to go grab it. And if they're thinking, well, I would love to get this higher powered blaster, look at how hard it hits, ooh, it looks really cool, they're going to probably grab a Striker, or they're going to grab, you know, whatever else, you know, Dart Zone is putting out there, because Dart Zone's really the only other one that puts out higher powered blasters on big box store shelves.
Right.
So that's where their only pitfall is going to be. It's almost like they're kind of relying on word of mouth from us in the hobby. And I think that could be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. So,
yeah,
I think it can. I will say, for what it's worth, the community is already doing that word of mouth. Everyone,
oh, yeah, very much so.
Pretty much, for the most part, are recommending them. There are a couple people I've seen get a lemon, but I suspect that the issue might be fixable.
I mean, that's always going to happen with these mass production products, you know.
Yeah,
like that's going to happen.
Issue with the trigger, where it won't, where you're pulling, it'll kind of seize up in there. It has to do with how the blaster actually works, because it doesn't like catch like a Nexus Pro does. In a normal springer, you catch and it wants to stay caught. And that's how that works.
Mm.
In the Tryon, it wants to not stay caught. And what the trigger does is it basically stops the catch from sliding down until you've pulled it. So you're just removing the support from the catch, and the catch moves itself down.
That is very different.
It is. It's really fascinating. I've never seen anything like it before.
Wild. So if the trigger fails, the result is firing. Whereas normally, if the trigger fails, the result is not firing.
Yes.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Weird. Okay.
I suspect the
does that have to do with the fact that it has slam fire?
No. The slam fire mechanism probably isn't coming into play here. It basically just acts as a second stopper.
Okay.
But it that's removed from play once you've got the pump all the way forward.
Got it. Okay.
What I suspect the issue might be is a little bit of friction and possibly too heavy of a catch spring. I have yet to test that theory though.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'm excited to see what happens with this blaster in the hobby.
I think we're already seeing people design parts for it. I can already tell this is going to be a community favorite. Yeah.
Can we all just agree, though, even though we know that it fills a role that's similar to the role that was recently filled by the Nexus, not to call it the next Nexus or the Nexus Killer? We just agree not to call it that.
It's
a different blaster. Leave it alone.
Yeah, it's a different blaster. It's got a lot of new things added into it. I would say it's a different blaster. And especially with what Jolt's talked to me about and showed me and things like that, I would absolutely call this a completely different blaster. It is not I would say it's on a different kind of playing field, to be honest.
But like in a good way. I would disagree, and I would say that while it's a different blaster, I think it does the same role better. If that makes any sense. It might not be as well known because of it not being in big box stores, but I think if you know about it, it fills the role better.
Yes. Fair. And maybe comparing it to a blaster that people do know is beneficial for getting the word out. Maybe. Okay, I'm open to it. Last thing on our community news list, 3D print designer Silly Butts has released a huge cache right at this new year of old designs, incomplete things, unfinished things, outdated versions of things, for general free access, but not for profit production. Have you guys looked through the collection?
Yes,
I looked vaguely through it.
So through the list, this is why I suggested people looked at the spreadsheet that Silly Butts made on the Google Doc. There are 110 lines of things. And it is just enormous. There's stuff based off of Hot Coin designs, which if you're not familiar with Hot Coin, they do a lot of like design sketches and stuff like that, like concept designs.
Right.
They have like pump action kits for like crossbows and like a brainstorming of a pump action 95 crossbow, stuff for Talon Claws. Things for Caliburns, bolt actions, just there is a lot of stuff in here. That's why I said it is a long list. It is very good to go in there and take a look at it. Like I said, there's not enough time in here to really kind of go over all of them. Cause like I said, 100 lines.
No, absolutely not. We're definitely
files.
Not doing
that. It is enormous. And, but it even goes into stuff for like the slab, the slab, which is released, there's even files in there for that as well. Even a flywheel version of the slab.
I remember that.
There's a pump action slab.
I remember when
pump
he was doing that.
Pump action slab,
I remember when he was doing that.
Yeah, so there.
Well, because this is the kind of designer that Silly Butts is. Like, Silly Butts will hack things together in a way that is very unique, I think. Just to do it.
Links.
Well, and he also did the unskewered skewer.
Yeah.
He did the pump action skewer.
Yeah. There was
which like literally was for the memes. It literally was for the memes. But
well, that's like the
does work
one. Oh yeah, no, they absolutely do. But and actually Silly even went to the extent of telling you whether it was done, pretty much done, needs work. You know, and actually so if you're looking at a project you would like to maybe continue working on, by all means you can look and say, hey, this one's pretty much done or needs a little bit of work, and you can then just continue on. And that's what's really fun about it is if you want If you want to try to start messing around with doing your own designs or coming up or trying to figure out and problem solve little stuff, yeah. This is a great repository of things to really kind of like cut your teeth on, especially for people who are just getting into CAD and model work. This is fantastic. It's hard to start from scratch. It's easy to come up with a solution for a problem.
Yep. I think that's why I'm really excited to see this as well, because especially knowing that a lot of the people who do designs in the hobby now came up that way, including Silly, and to see Silly turn around and make this available, a huge wealth of stuff for anybody, but potentially the next generation of designers for the hobby to have a platform to leap off of, I think is really, really exciting.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Absolutely. It's awesome that he's doing this, honestly.
Yep.
It's going to be a good resource.
Yeah. Cool. And we're not going to go through every single thing in this list, so that's probably all there is to say about it. But
the most notable ones are his slam fire calibernoids and whatever, and I think there's the super sledge in there as well.
I mean, everything in here is going to be notable to somebody. They're all pretty out there. There was some like skewer stuff I was actually considering printing and trying to make work. I can't remember what now, but I'll look at it later. So that's the end of our news list, but I did want to check in, Jolt. Is there anything? So Jolt has taken over the mod spotlight part of the show, and the blaster that you picked was pretty wild. And I saw this on Reddit before it came up on the Discord, and I was pretty blown away when I initially saw it too, partly because I was not sure what I was looking at for a while, like you were.
It took me a minute to even see what was going on there, because it's not every day you really see rhino fires used in, well, anything.
Yeah.
Let alone made into a primary class blaster that's like a carbine.
Yeah.
It's just not something you see. Like, I recognize that the thing is dark. Like, there's no getting around that. There's no orange tip or anything, but, like, the amount of work that went into this, you can tell this guy has some skill. Because it's super clean.
Yeah.
Clean enough where it's super hard to figure out what is what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say on integrations, it was impressive because they did something. I've seen minimized rhino fires. I've seen rhino fires with a grip on them and stuff like that and not use a tripod. But this individual turned it on its side to make it like a bottom mag fed blaster that you wouldn't know has a top mag for it, and you could put a mag in and have a mag top and bottom, and it just looked ridiculous. And I loved how ridiculous and clean it was. And when you finally find out it was a rhino fire, you could start looking and saying, oh, there's the rhino fire rail. Oh, look at that. There's the tripod mount. They left it on there. You know, it was really impressive to look at.
Even the parts usage, absolutely fantastic. Like, you'll look in the handguard is actually part of a Maverick. The same Maverick probably used for part of the muzzle. Like, the more you look, the more you see. It takes a while, but you get there, and it just blends so seamlessly.
They also made their own custom mag. The one of the main images was actually a mag that has body panels and paint on it, and it's got custom panels work done on it. So it wasn't just the blaster; even the mag that was used was actually a custom one. It was impressive.
That's right.
Even the paint job itself, like, while dark, that is very, very, like, cleanly done. Like, the lines are all sharp, and the white paint, it doesn't look like you can see anything underneath it. I know that can be an issue with white paint sometimes. This looks pretty spotless.
So my other question is, was there anything else in the list that was an honorable mention? Like, was there anything else you were considering showcasing?
There was one that I was considering. This is a strife made by Thirsty for Foam that he made with the Shot Blast. It's a super soaker, and he basically took the shell of that and a couple other like small pieces of other shells and put them on a Magwell minimized strife with like a band blaster's cage, and it looks good, and there's no paint on it, there's no putty.
I think I see the one you're talking unpainted. About Yeah,
it's amazing that it just worked.
That is pretty wild. I do see that one. I gotta admit, I also see there's the Splatoon themed.
Oh yeah,
the Splatoon themed X-Shot Crusher, which is just very cool. I think this is cosmetic, though. Cosmetic mods are valid and awesome.
Cosmetically, it's gorgeous.
I just like Splatoon also. And I also, the Sledge Fire mod, the clip fed, isn't that what's going on here?
Might be a little further back, but yeah, that was super cool.
Came out on the first. It's a pump action. It's a Sledge Fire mod that makes it pump action and clip fed. And
such a wild combination there.
And plus the version of it, the prototype that they made. I feel like I should be naming people, but I can't find the name easily because it's like a Reddit link that goes through. But I recommend anybody check it out. The print on it too, the color is matched perfectly and it just looks gorgeous. It looks amazing. And I just love the Sledge Fire. I love that color. So
it looks like it was Gunner Leo that made that one, by the way.
Thank you. There we go.
Okay.
On Reddit.
So I just really love that. The Strife one that we mentioned earlier, the Strife and the Super Soaker is by Danny Pack. Just to make sure we get more names in there. Cool. I think that's it, unless y'all have anything else you want to bring up before we cap this off.
I think that's it. A good first go. A little bit long, but, you know.
Well, again, first episode, I expected it to go long. Maybe, I mean, we also are only going to do one of these every 2 weeks. So maybe they will be long and people can spend 2 weeks listening to it if they want to. My last question is, what do y'all want to tell people to check out? Where are y'all at? Val, why don't you go first?
So I have my Instagram at VileMods as well. VileMods is pretty much always used, but VileMods, no space or anything. I have Twitch as well, which is Vile_mods. And then my YouTube channel, which is also VileMods.
And the Twitch, the VileMods Twitch is the hangout Friday and Saturday nights.
Friday, Saturday nights are my typical.
That's where all the Nerf delinquents go.
And I am there for a long time, 8 hours usually. So I start normally 12 p.m. Pacific. And normally we go until 8 p.m. now. So
yep,
we're there and lots of farts.
That is true. And Jolt, what have you got to plug?
Just the YouTube, honestly. You can find me under JoltKing627 on YouTube if you want to be tortured by tons of internal crap.
Very true. I, of course, my main channel is Family Foam Sport. I'm on every platform, but I'm most active on YouTube and sometimes on TikTok when I'm in the mood. And it's just Family Foam Sport, no spaces or anything everywhere. There'll be links related to wherever this is. Additionally to that, I'm a musician. I do stuff that's not Nerf. And I'm in the middle of writing a song every day through the month of January, including today. I just posted a song today, and I will do one tomorrow, and it will just
January.
Keep going. Some people call it January, and I've called it January before, but this year it's just daily songs. I don't know. Actually, I'm doing a thing in my personal Discord that Jolt is participating in, and he's doing a mod a day for that. Sometimes it's just progress on a mod. Sometimes it's fixing something. Sometimes it's attempting something. But like, it's been really awesome just having a group of people kind of like doing stuff every single day. And then every week I release an EP of new sounds and music. And currently those are mostly made up of my daily songs. But you can find all that stuff under the name Kinetic Turtle on YouTube, on Bandcamp, on stuff. So that's what I do. And that's my jam. And this has been really, really fun. Thank you to everybody out there listening. I hope you had you got a lot out of this and enjoyed it. I'm really enjoying the banter, the three of us getting to just kind of chat like this and make fun of t-shirts and enjoy good design decisions together.
Yep. Thank you all.
Sweet.
Appreciate it.
thank you, everybody.
Have a good time, folks.
Have a great 2 weeks, and we'll see you in the next one.
Always eat hot glue.